Hi, this is Danielle from The Dallas Curator. Thanks for downloading Art for Your Ear, an artsy podcast filled with behind-the-scenes stories from amazing artists before they're in the art history books. This is episode 9, and it is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. Oh, and they're giving listeners 10% off all art at SaatchiArt.com. Just use Jealous Curator at checkout. Okay, today I'm talking to San Francisco-based Vincent Saratella, an incredibly talented artist who wakes up very early every morning to draw and paint, and then heads out the door to be an effects technical director at Pixar for the rest of the day. What? Okay, let's call him because I have a lot of questions about how all of that works. Hi, Vincent.
Hi, Danielle.
How are you?
Pretty good. Can't complain.
It's been a while since we've actually talked.
I know, since the last time I think you were in San Francisco.
Yeah, that was a while ago. I am so excited about this because I know you through your day job. I don't really know. Well, no, but I met you through art. So I have a lot of questions. Let's just say that.
Sure.
And because I have a lot of questions, I'm going to start with the speed round. Because I know you're nervous about the speed round, and I'm going to make you do it right off the bat.
Great. I can't promise when impulse answers. I'm not really sure what's going to come out.
I know. So many artists have like these full like paragraph answers. I'm like, it's called the speed round, people. Speed round. Okay. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
Okay, ready? Where were you born?
Miami. Hmm. Yep.
Is your painting table messy or tidy?
It's always tidy when I start, and then it gets messy towards the end.
And then do you leave it messy or do you clean it back up?
I clean it back up.
Hmm. Yep. Favorite snack food?
Snack food, probably chips.
Good answer. That's my favorite. Tropical vacation or European adventure?
European adventure.
Okay. And I'm going to come back to that. And favorite animated film?
Toy Story, I have to say, for sure.
And how is that for a segue into your day job?
Sounds good.
So everyone that's listening, I'm going to quickly tell the story of how we met. So I believe your wife actually sent me an email about your 365-day drawing project.
Yes.
She did. She's such a lovely lady, so sweet. And she sent this email and said, you know, my husband's doing this a drawing a day giveaway. Could you go check it out? So you know, I always go check things out, but you know, you never know, right? And I thought, oh, she might just be a really nice wife and her husband might suck, but I'll go look. And the drawings were so awesome. So the idea was you would post one of your drawings on Facebook and whoever was the first to comment got it for free.
Yes.
And so I was like, oh my God. So I got all addicted to it. And I found one that I loved. I wrote the comment really quickly. I thought I was the first one. And then when I refreshed, I was like 10th. Like people were on it. And I tried a bunch of different times and I could not get it. And so I wrote a big post about you. And I think I finally emailed you and said, I really want one of your blow pop lollipops. And I wasn't fast enough. So you did a specific one and let me comment. And I think I was still third, but you gave it to me anyway.
That's the only one.
I know. Thank you for that. It's in my living room and I love it so much. And I'll include it in the post that I write about this so people can see it. But I loved it so much. And thank you for giving me a tiny bit of special treatment because I love it. Tell me about that a little bit. Like, how did you decide to do that? And
Project 365?
Yeah, because painting is really your thing, right?
Yep.
And so how did this come about?
So I had subscribed to just various art websites like ArtNet and Art Cabinet and things like this. And, you know, they always recap the year, just sending out their email blast about what had happened that year. And all of them were talking about what the auction houses were producing. So all these massive numbers and record-breaking sales. The more I was getting those emails, the more I was realizing how inaccessible original work like that was becoming for the general public. Mm. And literally on a whim, I just did a quick sketch and posted it on on a Facebook page that I created and wrote free drawing. And I decided I'm going to give back, you know, 365 pieces, one every day for this year, to anybody. Didn't matter where you're from, you know, your any political connections to someone else or anything. If you commented on it and you connected with this piece, then I thought, oh, it'd be really great to, you know, get back out there and meet all the people who are connecting with my work. And I just felt like I was losing that you know, original inspiration to why I started doing all this from the beginning, you know, and that sort of that purity when you're a kid, you know, creating something on paper and then just sharing it with your friends or family. And that was it. Then at some point along the way, you get kind of wrapped up in who's showing your work, who's collecting mm-hmm. your work. And, you know, I just found a lot of my art friends and stuff like this, it's kind of, that's what most of their concerns were about. And I just really loved kind of reconnecting with everybody all over the world that year. And, you know, this is literally people who have also never been exposed to original work like that. So, I mean, I was sending work to bus drivers, cab drivers, and I mean, I can go into crazy detail about all of that, but these people, by the end of the project, all offered me personal tours of their country or their city. And it was insane, you know, but, you know, it was a really humbling experience by the end of the year.
It was amazing. The drawings were so good. And yeah, exactly. All the stories that come out of it, and just raising that question about why can't original art be accessible? That is fantastic. And so you've actually turned it into a book, right?
Yeah. And so at the end of that project, you know, I was thinking, wow, all these really great stories kind of came from that. And a lot of them were personal messages. So I thought, you know, how could I share this with everybody? And how could I capture that whole year? So I thought, well, you know, a book format would be best. So I grabbed all 365 images, you know, wrote some text for it, and, you know, got a really excellent art historian to write the foreword, Amy Brandolino. And then I thought, okay, well, I'm going to package this up and give it to a book publisher and say, you know, pitch it to them and say, hey, here's this massive amount of work and text and stories. And then I started to think, well, it kind of contradicts the whole premise of the project, where here's this outside source that comes in, and while I was building these relationships, they're going to come and profit from the artist. And then it's kind of back to square one, where the whole original point of the project came from. So I thought, okay, I know nothing about publishing, but if I could self-publish this book and raise the money on Kickstarter, then I can do it myself. And then I could control where the proceeds go. And then I wanted to roll 100% of the proceeds back into a local charity that's supporting the arts and creativity. And that's where I found the Children's Creativity Museum here in San Francisco. And it was great. You know, they were really thrilled to be part of the project and to know that all the proceeds were going to them, and I had 1,000 books delivered to their museum, and, you know, they've been sort of benefiting from it ever since.
That is just the best story ever.
It was crazy, but it was just something I didn't want to profit from, you know.
Yeah, that is just even more admirable. Like, the whole thing is just so inspiring. I'm sure, I mean, I get a little teary-eyed even listening to it. I'm sure everybody at home is thinking that exact thing too. Like, just not only are you so talented, but so generous, and it's just amazing. And so, where can people buy the book?
The creativity.org, the museum, they still have, I think they have a special page dedicated for it. So I think if you go to their website, there's a link off their homepage somewhere where you can find the book.
Well, I'll put it up on my site too, but if people want to go and look, they might be looking right now for it. And but I'll also put it in my post. So that's how we met, and I got my blow pop and I framed it and put it on the wall.
Awesome.
And then about, I don't even know how much longer later, maybe a year or so later, you emailed and said, hey, do you want to come and talk at Pixar?
Yes.
And I was like, okay, do you know somebody at Pixar? Like, what? I don't get it. You're a drawing painting guy. And you're like, no, I work at Pixar. And I was just like, what? Because I had no idea that that was your day job. And so I have several questions about this. But first of all, so you studied fine art. How Yes. do you go from studying fine art to working at Pixar? And then what do you do at Pixar?
Oh, man, that is a crazy story.
Perfect. That's what we love on podcasts, crazy yeah. stories.
So how I ended up at Pixar is kind of funny. So obviously, I got my BFA in painting at Cooper Union in New York. And right after I had graduated, I was picked up by a gallery in Soho that started representing my work. And then... you're young, you're naive, you sort of don't understand the art business, which is just a weird thing to me that business, the art business is not taught at schools more.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm out there, I'm sort of working with this gallery, and then I realize they're taking 10% of the, I'm getting 10% of the sale price. So I decided to kind of go on my own. And I had taught myself Houdini, which is the 3D animation package that I use. And at Cooper Union, it was an art, architecture, and engineering school. The engineering school, all the engineers were really interested in AutoCAD and this sort of very precise engineering software. But then they were donated this beta software called Houdini, but they weren't interested. So I had recently seen Jurassic Park and was completely, as an artist, completely floored that I knew I was looking at something that didn't exist. But I know that there had to be some kind of trick to it. So I became super fascinated with trying to understand essentially the magic behind how they created that, the effects for that. And so that led me to, 3D animation and how that works. So I just went over there and sat down with three massive manuals and just went page by page and, taught myself computer engineering essentially from that.
And were you graduated already? You just sort of went back on your own, or did you take more school?
No, I just, I was there the last semester I started just sitting down and looking through this stuff. So then, I never had professional experience with it, but I just knew a lot about it from, going page by page to these manuals. So then, when I left the gallery, I said, okay, well, I'm going to rebuild my portfolio, because they had sold all the work. I had, no work to go on to another gallery with. And I had approached some of the other ones and they said, well, do you have any work? Do you have any, do you have your collector information? And they didn't give me any of that. I mean, it was really just like starting over. So I was thinking, all right, well, let me rethink what I want to do with the art. And this is in New York, so it's, a really tricky town, for rent, for all this stuff. And since I just had graduated, I stayed on various couches and stuff like this and, just did that art New York thing for a while. And, what's really interesting is when you're painted into a corner, you find out how creative you can be to solve problems. And it's something that I end up carrying all the way till today. But so because I had started teaching myself the 3D animation stuff, then I thought, okay, well, let me, try to see if I could pick up some work doing that while I can financially support the artwork in the meantime. And then my wife, Marissa, is a photo producer, so at an ad agency, and she was at Messner at the time. And a photo rep came to talk to her, and she always has my postcards in the back of her office. So it's kind of behind her when people are talking to her. And this woman started commenting on the art, and she said, oh, yeah, he's a painter and also does this 3D animation stuff. So she said, well, I'm a producer over at a commercial house called Rhinoceros, which ended up turning to Rhino FX in New York. And she said, well, we're looking for somebody. So I had went over there for an interview, and I had zero experience doing anything professionally. But I just knew all the buttons, and I knew what this stuff was. And they interviewed me and said, okay, well, do you feel comfortable doing this and doing that? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, and again, I had, you know, no money, nowhere really to live. So it was really important that I got this job. So I was going to say yes to whatever they asked. And and so the next week they called and said, great, you know, come in and you know, we want you to start. So I got there. And they gave me, I'll never forget, it was a UBS commercial. And they said, you know, here, this is due in a couple weeks, and you're going to do everything. And, you know, in film houses like Pixar and stuff like this, you're sort of specialized. So it's a, you know, it's a bigger production pipeline, and you're specialized in the technique you end up doing. But with New York commercial houses, you wear a lot of hats. And in this case, you're asked to do the entire commercial spot yourself. So again, I knew nothing about, you know, doing this stuff professionally. So
God, I feel the stress for you.
Oh, you could imagine. So I literally slept there the entire time that I was working. I don't even think the people I work with knew about this, and they'll probably listen to this and now hear the real story. But, you know, they had a kitchen, so it was great. I could be fed. And I literally slept there learning what I had to do for this. But then from that, you know, if we fast forward, I'd say about 3 years, you know, little by little, I kept learning more and more, and they kept feeding me more and more. And by the end of those 3 years, Side Effects from Toronto had asked, they were so pleased with the work that was coming out of Rhino FX at the time that they asked if I could do a presentation in San Antonio of all the work that I've been doing there, so that I get the forum, which is at this massive, you know, it had to be like 1,000 people in this auditorium. And the other two people presenting was this guy, Hank Driscoll from Disney, talking about Reign of Fire, and this guy, Theo Vandenhout, talking about Spider-Man 1 that just came out, which was a massive blockbuster. And then there's me talking about these commercials. So I had never given a presentation either at that time. So I went so above and beyond the kind of presentation that you would give for this. Those guys just grab some loops, and they're going to show, you know, some of their Spider-Man tests. And you know, Hank was showing some of the fire tests. And then I had music and animation, and it was all synced. Like, it was crazy. Like, that literally by the time I was done, everybody stood up clapping. And I was the first one to go up because they wanted to save Spider-Man, because that was the year it had come out, which 2003. They wanted to save those guys for later. So after I came down, the guy Theo from Sony Pictures on Spider-Man just goes, at that moment, he's like, do you want to come to LA and work on Spider-Man 2? You know, like, that was my interview, basically.
Oh, and my God.
So then I went back to New York. You know, my wife comes from an Italian family, so we had just gotten married. And, you know, literally to have to tell her family that, oh, you know, by the way, we're moving to LA and we just got married. And, you know, it was like, you just something you don't do. So then after I got to L.A., you know, did a bunch of work there, and eventually some people that I worked with at Sony ended up coming out here to Pixar, and then they were switching over their effects department to use this software, and they were looking for people to kind of be a good point person for this Houdini effects type stuff. And that's how I sort of got to Pixar, and then they called me up and asked if I wanted to come out, and, you know, I came up here, had the craziest interview, you know, I've ever had. It was 20 people all day, and, you know, and they were very particular about who they bring in. So it was, you know, it was an interesting ride for sure, but that's how I ended up here. And, you know, the irony is I'm still supporting the artwork, and I'm still, like, you know, working on the art, and it's all kind of rooted in the idea of like, okay, I'm gonna get this job to support the work, and I ended up at Pixar still.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, that's what I was going to interrupt and ask, is like, through all of that, were you still painting, or did you even have time?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's, you know.
Do you sleep or no?
It's a lot of people ask me that, you know, but it's a tricky one, but it's something I have to do, and it's weird. I get in a weird mood if I don't work.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have to paint, and I just make it part of my, you know, just like anyone would exercise or take a shower, I try to wake up and work on my art for a few hours. And, you know, when I get home, do the same.
Hmm.
I'll set my alarm clock early before I come in and, you know, try to spend some time in the studio and quiet and just work on stuff. And it's, you know, it's, I think, honestly, that's why I'm here, because when I interviewed, they were, I think, a little more excited to learn that I was an artist doing a very technical job than I was just being a computer engineer coming in.
Yeah, that it makes you a very special combination of person.
And it's important to Pixar. It's always been their sort of mantra to have both. Now the art feeds the technology, and the technology feeds the art. So I think they like this idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's very evident. I mean, I have an 8-year-old son who, you know, loves every Pixar movie. And we actually just went to see Inside Out. And I made him, usually as soon as the movie's over, we leave.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting there and everyone's leaving and he's looking around. And he's like, you know, that 8-year-old thing where now you're just embarrassed of everything. And he goes, why are we still sitting here? And I said, because we're waiting for my friend Vincent's name to come up.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And he was like, what? And I said, yeah, remember Vincent from Pixar? He worked on this. Oh, so we sat and watched and there went your name. And we were like, woohoo, there he goes. And so that movie is doing so well. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, everybody's really excited about it here.
But what I was going to ask, what was I going to ask?
What did I do on it?
Well, okay. What did you do on it? I think I know, but yeah, let's hear.
Oh, our department in general, and kind of what, you know, luckily I end up getting to do is a lot of these sort of specialty organic sort of things that they're not quite sure how to hand animate. So they want us to kind of come up with a way, either algorithmically or through some procedural sort of network to build these sort of organic things. So we end up, you know, doing a lot of like, or in my case specifically for Inside Out, the train of thought, which would kind of construct and deconstruct on the fly, was a lot bigger part of the film before. But the moments that you do see it, the idea was that as Riley's thought, because thoughts can kind of go in any direction, they didn't want to have any notion that there were tracks that already pre-existed in her head. So as her thoughts are evolving or changing, so would the train. It would kind of be able to change direction on the fly. So then they came to me and said, okay, well, we need to build this train that these tracks that the train's going to ride on. And as it's moving, it just needs to construct trestles and rails and catenary wires and things like this as it's moving through space. So myself and this guy Michael Fredrickson from the sets department and a guy Peter Rowe from shading, you know, we got together and we just kind of thought about, okay, well, how are we going to solve that? And, you know, it was a lot trickier than we thought. But
I guess so. That is so cool. Yeah. See, now I have to watch it again.
Yep.
But that's so cool. I know what I was going to ask you.
Sure.
So when I was there, Monsters University had just come out.
Yes.
And so the whole campus was sort of decorated to look like a university.
Yes.
And you were saying that, like, when Brave came out, it was all done to look, you know, like Brave. And so what does it look like in there right now?
They changed all the artwork to be Inside Out artwork, and the Upper West Corridor Gallery has all the work from the art department on what they did for Inside Out. And for a while, we had massive, massive multicolored balloons sitting in the atrium, which I think were about 5 feet in diameter.
Wow.
That you can just kind of kick around. So it looked like a huge playpen of spheres that were filled the atrium. So that was pretty fun.
That's really cool. I was wondering if there were any of the little, core memories floating around.
Yep. That's what those were. Yeah.
That is just so cool. I just wanted to go back quickly and ask, so you said that, you work on your fine art before and after, and I'm just working on my next book right now. And there's a part about exactly that, if you want to have a creative life, you have to make a creative life. And that might mean setting your alarm for 5 a.m. And that might mean working till midnight. And but one of the things, I'm trying to take my own advice. Mm-hmm. One of the things I realized about myself is that I don't really get creative until about 3 p.m. And then I could be creative till 3 a.m. But so I use my morning for all of my, bookkeeping, errands, all that junk. And then I'm creative in the afternoon. Do you find that you can kind of turn on that switch whenever you want? Or do you find that you're more creative in the morning or the night or both?
Oh, for sure. I think, for me anyway, out of necessity, when I'm sort of painted in a corner or whatever my options are, I'll find that I just have to do what I have to do in that case. And, it's like that quote from, Chuck Close was really amazing to me about how he said, inspiration's for amateurs, the rest of us just show up and get to work.
Yeah, I love that quote.
Yeah, and it's like I think about that all the time. And when if the morning's going to work for me or the afternoon or the weekends, the evening or the weekends are going to work, then that's what's going to work. And I have to use that time productively because, otherwise I'm not going to have it.
Yeah.
But, why I ended up specifically doing this type of work at Pixar was because it was a very left brain approach. And, and the artwork is a very right brain sort of approach. So mentally, I'm not exhausted when I go home to paint or when I come here to work on this. Whereas a lot of people have said, oh, why don't you work in the art department, designing, sets, characters, whatever, just painting some kind of concept images. And, that's the reason. I think if I did it at work and I did it at home, I would just mentally exhaust that side of my head.
So that's a really good point. That's what I find because I'm a graphic designer by day.
Yeah.
And so, you're creative all day and just by the end, you're like, oh my God, I've got nothing left. And right. I thought that when I found out that you worked at Pixar, I just assumed it was, character development whatever. And so it is really interesting. And you've planned your life very well.
There's no planning at all. This is literally just like whatever happens, I sort of try not to fight it too much and just go with the flow.
It's like the train trestles just showing up. So one thing I quickly wanted to go back to before we say goodbye until next time was one of the questions in the speed round was tropical vacation or European adventure. And you said European adventure. Yes. And I think I know why, because you just told me a very cool fact.
What's that?
Who you're related to way, way, way back when.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that weird?
So weird.
I know. It's like, when my mom had, just generally looking for stuff like that and talking to family members, she just calls me up and said, hey, you're related to, the 17th century Baroque painter, Pedro de Núñez de Villavicencio. And, I was like, so I looked it up and I was looking at his work and I'm like, wow, that's amazing. It just made me want to go and buy a red velvet jacket and start hanging like cherubs all over my apartment.
I know. What a cool thing to find out. I went and looked him up on Wikipedia. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, well, there you go. You've got painting in your blood. So I'm not surprised at all that you said European adventure.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's kind of amazing that to just know, it's almost confirmation that through genetic makeup, that is what I'm supposed to be doing, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I have any. I'll have to dig around and see who I've got in my past.
Just go to ancestry.com.
Yeah, there you go.
You'll find something.
Anyway, I think that's all my questions for you. And it's just, all so interesting, and I'm so happy that I know you, and thank you for inviting me to come to Pixar. That was so cool, and thank you for making my blow pop.
Oh, of course.
And yeah, it's just been so fun getting to know you, and hopefully we've got more ahead.
Yes, hopefully I didn't ramble too much or go off on crazy tangents.
No, I loved it. It's just so interesting, and I was so excited to talk to you, partly because I didn't know the answers to any of this.
Oh, cool.
You know, and I was like, I really want to know, because I, you know, wasn't really sure how the 365 started, and I didn't know how you got to Pixar. So I feel like my questions have been answered.
Perfect. Happy to help.
Well, thanks again for taking time out to do this with me. And I should let you get back to either painting or Pixaring.
Yep.
And I will give you a shout next time I'm in San Francisco.
Please do. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, Danielle.
I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Was it me, or does Vincent sound a lot like Mark Ruffalo? It took me about 10 minutes to figure out who he sounded like. Oh, and I discovered after we chatted that he also worked on the fire that shoots out of the top of Anger's head in Inside Out. What an awesome job. Anyway, thanks so much to Mark. I mean Vincent, Saatchi Art, and of course to you for listening. The next episode will be ready for your ears next Saturday. See you then.